even when Wiley approached me to write this book, I was actually really scared to do it because I was like, who was I to write a book about leadership? Imposter syndrome's natural, you know, it's just because you're getting out of your comfort zone because our brain always wants us to be safe, right? It's teaching us how to be safe. But playing safe sometimes doesn't help, right? Because we are stuck in that rut we're in. But if you go out there, make mistakes, show up scared, that's how you build confidence. In my culture, you know, there's hardly any Asian women in leadership roles. And it's time, you know, we create media that really dismantles the narrative that we're all quiet, submissive, and obedient.
As a business owner, you'll know you either need to hire a writer or become a writer. Welcome to the show where you'll hear conversations covering everything you need to know about writing for and about your business.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Writing, and I'm excited to have on today Sheena Yap Chan. She's a keynote speaker, a podcaster, consultant, and author on building self-confidence. She currently inspires women through her award-winning podcast called The Tao of Self-Confidence, where she interviews Asian women about their inner journey to self-confidence. Her mission is to help Asian women boost their confidence and to live their authentic selves. Help Asian women create a voice in the world and create a stronger representation for Asian women. Sheena has been featured on Mind Valley, Slice CA, Marketing in Asia, Manila Times, and more. She is also the top 100 Filipinos to follow on LinkedIn for inspiration and learning in 2020, and author of the forthcoming book, The Tao of Self-Confidence, published by Wiley. So welcome to the show, Sheena. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor.
Oh, pleased to have you here. And congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
Very exciting. When is it coming out?
It's coming out May 23.
Okay.
In the US and Canada. I'm not sure everywhere else.
Okay. So I think it will be out already by the time. Oh, no, possibly not. Possibly still forthcoming when this podcast airs. But yes, we can update it, put the link anyway in the show notes. So, yeah, when you put yourself out there as a writer, you're stepping forward in some way as a leader, aren't you? And something I know that many writers deal with is the issue of confidence, either because they're not confident in their writing, or, you know, they think they haven't got anything interesting, original, or clever enough to say. So Sheena, you are the perfect person to come and talk to us about writing and confidence and leading. Can we start off then by, if you just tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a keynote speaker, consultant, podcaster, and author on building self-confidence. Everything really started with my podcast, which is also called The Tao of Self-Confidence, where I interview Asian women about their journey to self-confidence. And since then, I've interviewed over 700 Asian women from around the world.
Wow.
Different careers, different backgrounds. Yeah. For me, representation was really important, and also providing a support system, because I was also dealing with my own confidence issues, and there was no support systems that really catered to Asian women. So I just felt like I was the only one dealing with it. But people don't realize that our culture always tells us to never talk about how we're feeling, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is why it's so important to have stories where we can be vulnerable, when we can share some of the things we go through. And of course, people beyond my culture can relate to that, because we all go through confidence issues, imposter syndrome, fear, not feeling good enough, mm-hmm. not worthy, not trusting our gut. And so, I mean, of course, I still deal with confidence issues. Even when Wiley approached me to write this book, I was actually really scared to do it, you know, imposter syndrome.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was like, who was I to write a book about leadership? And I realized, you know what? Imposter syndrome's natural, you know, it's just because you're getting out of your comfort zone, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to see it as something good, because our brain always wants us to be safe, right? It's teaching us how to be safe. But playing safe sometimes doesn't help, right? Because we are stuck in that rut we're in. But if you go out there, make mistakes, show up scared, that's how you build confidence, right? And so even though I felt like I wasn't good enough, I went ahead and did it, because I realized, you know, they gave me this opportunity for a reason. And if I don't take this chance now, then when would I ever take it, right? Especially in my culture, you know, there's hardly any Asian women in leadership roles. And it's time, you know, we create media that really dismantles the narrative that we're all quiet, submissive, and obedient.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so glad you took that opportunity and did take it. And you're right, you know, it can be really scary when we get big opportunities like that come our way. So yeah, I think that's really important. So just for context, you know, perhaps people that don't know as much about Asian women in leadership, and particularly I think you look at the UK and Canada, is it particularly? So maybe you could talk a little bit about that, or if you know anything about the UK as well.
Yeah, mostly I've focused on USA because that's my biggest audience in for my podcast, Canada, because I live here. UK as well, because I know, you know, there's also racism that's dealt there, also anti-Asian hate. And so I've spoken to some women who've lived there and who've been, you know, been treated unfairly due to the color of the skin. Like there's a huge Asian community in the UK. And of course, when they say they're from London, you know, people will probably ask, but where are you really from? Right. Even though they were born and raised there. Same thing happens in Canada and the US. You know, a lot of us have, well, I was born in the Philippines, but I was here, I've been in Canada since I was seven. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, you know, when people say, ask me, you know, where I'm from, and then I say I'm from Toronto, but there, and then, of course, I always get the other question, but where are you really from? Right. We would never ask anybody else that question. It's so crazy that just because we don't look a certain way, we can't be considered Canadian, American, or English, even though we've lived here for most of our lives, right? And especially in Canada and America, I mean, we're all immigrants, you know? We're all immigrants. None of us own this land, you know? We're here all the same except for Indigenous people, right? So it's been fortunate when someone tells us to go back home to China, right? Because it's the same people who also immigrated here. Not realizing, like, you know, we could say the same thing to you, but we wouldn't do that because it's rude, it's offensive, and we should really be treating everybody as equals versus, you know, telling us to go back home, that we were the cause of the COVID, and that's how, you know, the rise of anti-Asian hate started. And Europe also has a high number as well. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people who live in Europe, and they said it's the same thing, but nobody really talks about it. Also, we also have, you know, anti-Asian racism. And it's crazy how people always say that, you know, just because Canadians are nice, that it doesn't happen. But it really does. We have the highest per capita when it comes to the hate crimes. So it's crazy, you know.
Yeah, that's something we don't hear about Canada, I must admit. Yeah. And I've heard you talk about statistics about Asian women in management. I don't know if you have any kind of up-to-date statistics.
Yeah, I mean, the latest one so far that I've had is that in 2021, a report from Catalyst Inc. mentioned that Asian women represented 2.7% in management roles in the U.S. And then a report from McKinsey late last year mentioned that it fell down 80%. So,
oh wow,
I don't know what we're left with, to be honest.
Yeah.
Crazy, right? And so it was the main reason why I also wrote the book, because, you know, it's always a big wonder, like, why are we going through this? You know, what's happening? And so, you know, instead of talking about how to be a leader, we really got to dig deep, right?
Cultural
values, society values. Here we have the model minority myth, trauma. You know, we all go through some form of trauma, and sometimes that trauma can control us and hold us back to showing up as our best self. So, you know, that was one thing I was realizing. There's not a lot of books out there that really go to the deep root, right? Talking about the different things that causes us to not move forward, especially for Asian women. You know, historically, we've just always been second class to men. If you go to do the research in any country in Asia, it's mainly that, right? We're treated as second class. And then in the US and Canada, you know, we've been in these countries for centuries, but nobody ever talks about the history of it, right? It was never taught in schools. Nobody ever talked about the Chinese Exclusion Act or Chinese people getting paid half the wages to build the railroads in Canada and America, Japanese internment camps. Even Laos is like considered the most bombed country in the world. Nobody knows that. And if you ever look up how big Laos is, it's not a big country. There's just so many things that just been kept under the dark, and people think, you know, a lot of people think that racism against Asians only happened during the pandemic, when it's been happening for centuries. it's unfortunate that, you know, they hit all this, right? Because we, you know, I like even here in Canada, Chinese people had to pay a head tax, and it was equivalent to two homes. And if we did that today, we'd all be broke, because it would cost like $2 million a person just to enter the country.
Okay, so coming back to your book, who specifically is your book for, and who is it aimed at? I know, so it's aimed at Asian women. Will other readers find something from it?
Of course. I mean, you know, it's funny because for so long I've been rejected by people telling me that my story was too specific or it catered a specific audience. And to me, I was always like, what makes it specific? Is it because of the way that I look? Is it my cultural background? You know, what makes it specific? And I believe our specific stories is what really creates the change, you know, to have different solutions, different perspectives on life. And, you know, like me and you, we have things in common. We're both women, you know. I mean, that's one big commonality, right? We go through different issues, like not feeling good enough, getting scared, having trauma. I mean, I'm sure there's still negative stereotypes that you go through just for being a woman, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, this can relate to anybody. And of course, when you look at K-pop bands like BTS and Blackpink, I mean, they sing in Korean, but yet they have worldwide fans. Mm-hmm. So just because it doesn't fit whatever's narrative or box doesn't mean it can't relate to other people.
Yeah.
And I want people to realize that, you know, our specific stories do matter. You'd be surprised how many women I talk to and always say, well, I don't know if anyone would want to hear my story. And, you know, their stories are amazing.
Oh, same. Absolutely the same. And it is, as you say, it's the individual voices and those individual stories that we need to hear, and the different stories as well. So refreshing. Why the Tao of self-confidence, can I ask? Yeah. Where did that come from? Because I know that's been the name of your podcast. When did you start your podcast?
Oh my gosh. I launched my first episode in September 1st, 2015.
Yeah,
so when I was trying to find titles for my, well, okay, I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I want people to understand that I make mistakes and sometimes very bad ones. So when I first started my podcast, I actually wanted to name it The Stripper and have a tagline to strip your limiting beliefs away. And so I hired a graphic artist to do the podcast art, and it was literally a silhouette of a stripper with a whip. And I was in this podcast mastermind where I would get feedback, where I could learn from each other, because there were more seasoned podcasters than me. And so when I shared that, of course, you know, the outcome wasn't the greatest, you know.
No. And I think you might even find that kind of censored if you were posting it on social media and things. I don't know, but I wonder.
Back then in 2015, we didn't have so many terms and stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, of course, 9 out of 10 were like, you're going to give them the wrong message. And so I had to just take a step back. Well, at first I was like, oh my God, I'm a failure. If I can't even get the name right, how am I going to get the show right? But, you know, I took a step back, got clear, and I started looking on, back then it was iTunes. Podcast was on iTunes. There was no Apple Podcast back then. And I saw a lot of people saying the art of, right? The art of this, the art
of. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was like, well, that's good. The art of, but like, I don't want to be another person that says the art of. And so I just was trying to find another word to replace it. And how was a good one, because it means the way. And so it's just self-confidence. And that word self-confidence can doesn't mean there's one way. There's different ways, because we're all different. We all have different ways of learning confidence, building confidence, and that should be okay. But the fact that there's different ways, people can learn different tactics to build their confidence, right? Because what may work for me might not work for you.
Yeah.
And so that's how it came up.
Oh, that's perfect. And I mean, you know, naming things is so hard. I started my podcast in 2020, and I've changed the name now this season, but it's still not the right name. You know, okay, so you were approached by Wiley, right? Was that what made you want to write a book, or is it something that you'd been thinking about before then?
To be honest, I never thought that I would ever write my own book. you know, I've had other books where I was a co-author, And I was actually happy about that because, you know, to showcase so many women in one cover is very inspiring, right?
Yeah.
As women, you know, we need to share stories. We need to have more books out there. And people don't realize, especially if you're targeting women, 64% of readers globally are women. So, you know, it would make sense to be in a book, right? It would make sense to have a book. You know, there's a lot of male authors out there teaching women what to do. As women, we should go out there and teach women what to do because we would understand more. approached me. It was actually just a really big surprise. Like, I did not expect it at all. And, you know, I was just happy they approached me and like gone to all this, right? Having a book coming out, which has been such a huge blessing. It was just honestly a total shock. You know, people are like, who's your literary agent? I'm like, I don't have one.
Brilliant. And did they have the concept there or did they just say, do you have an idea for a book? Because I had something similar with a publisher come to me and say, do you have any ideas for a book? And was it similar to that?
Yeah, I came up with a concept, came out with the outline and just had to present it to them. And, you know, I had to learn to let it go. It's like, you know, here I've done everything. It's either they say yes or no, but either way, at least I know what that process looks like. And maybe later on there could be another publisher. Or if it's yes, then that's great, right? But either way, it's still a great opportunity to be presented with because for me, never in a million years did I think this would have ever happened to me. Even my own father was like, your book got published, right? He's like, yeah. He's like, well, then it must be good. Like, he's never read it. He's never heard what's about. But because it's published by Wiley, I mean, he just assumes it's good because a big time publisher like Wiley is publishing this book. And you know, Wiley's a huge publisher, you know, they're really known for business books.
Yeah, of course.
So to hear that, I was like, yeah, I guess I didn't see it that way.
I just love how modest you are. Just if you still can't believe it. So, yeah.
I mean, I'm just grateful, to be honest. And my one intention for this book really is to start changing the narrative for Asian women, you know, instead of seeing us as quiet and submissive. Is to see us as strong and courageous women, leaders in our own right. And we have proof that Asian women have, you know, made history, broken barriers, break the glass ceilings. You know, like we had one lady who became the first woman to be hired as a general manager in a major sports team. And that's huge, right? Of course, industry is heavily or 99% male dominated. And this lady, she, her name's Kim Ng, you know, she had a great track record, right? She's helped baseball teams win World Series. And if, in all honesty, if she was a man, she would have gotten that job a long time ago. She was actually rejected by 5 other teams to become general manager. But she kept moving forward because she knew that she was good. She has a proven track record. And then I think in 2018 or 2019, she finally got the position as a general manager. As in any major sports team, first woman, and first Asian person. So
yeah, brilliant. And is this someone that you interviewed on your podcast, or is that someone you talk about in your book?
She'd be on my bucket list.
Oh right, okay. Yeah. And you know, it's so important that the fact that you are there talking about these stories and you know showing people what's possible. I think for women to see, okay, yes, someone else can do this. I can do it too, you know? Yeah.
And, you know, it's not always like, you know, you have to be the smartest. I'm not saying you have to be stupid, but like, you don't have to know everything, right? You can just figure things out along the way. You know, this whole process for me, I just literally figured things out along the way, right? They said they needed an outline. Okay, I sat down and had an outline.
Same. Yeah.
They said, do you want to write a book? I said, yes. You know, we made it official. And the next day I started writing and I just started figuring out, what does this book look like? What am I going to put? And I just kept figuring it out along the way. I didn't have everything prepared. And most men are like that. They're not
yes, ready. Women, we need to be more like that with everything we do, isn't it? It's just starting and like, everyone is winging it in whatever we do. Yes. I think people don't realize that when you look at people that are kind of ahead of you, you think they've got it all sorted, but they don't until they get to that point that I think they're always winging it.
I think a really prime example of someone who literally is just winging it is Elon Musk when he took over Twitter, Like,
possibly not quite successful.
I mean, he's just literally figuring things out, tweeting a bunch of stuff, changing things around. I mean, you know, he's just doing it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then actually I heard him say the other day, someone said to him, would you sell it tomorrow if you could? He's like, yeah, I would sell it right away. You know, admitting that you've made a mistake and just trying things out, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, love or hate him. I mean, there's things I probably would never agree on the things he says, you know, probably, yeah. but I commend him for just going out there and making things happen. And so as women, we have to do the same thing. We have to be okay if we make a mistake, if we look stupid, if we get ghosted, if we get rejected. I mean, it's not the greatest feeling in the world, but I mean, we just learn to move forward,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We can learn to just figure things out along the way. It's actually a lot better for us, right? Yeah. There's moments in time where I'm being interviewed or I'm doing a speaking engagement and someone just will ask a question and I'll sometimes blank out and I'm like, oh, what am I going to say? And mm-hmm. So I have to think about it for a minute and I'll just start talking. And I don't even know if the words that's coming out of my mouth is starting to make sense. I'll just start talking. And then eventually, you know, it comes out and they're all like, that was a great answer. I'm like, thank the Lord.
Yeah.
But you know, that's how men do it. Like I had a friend, she's telling me how her boyfriend got a management job and then she was preparing for her own like position in a management role. And so she asked her boyfriend, like, what did you do to prepare for it? And he said three words, I don't know. And so, of course, because most men don't really know, they just go out there, figure it out when they're in that spot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if they get it or not, they just move on.
Yeah.
And this is why men and women face a huge confidence gap, because we may be 110% ready, but we still hold back.
I was going to say, it's a lot about, you know, doing the preparation. And I'm someone that will always over-prepare for any situation.
I'm guilty of that.
No,
right? I mean, I'm not saying I'm perfect. Of course, I only realized that like during the pandemic. So it's not like I'm an expert, but
it's
important to figure these things out and realizing, you know, everyone's just trying to figure it out. Nobody.
Yeah,
really-
no, that's right. That's right.
Unfortunately.
Well, something I wanted to ask you about, Sheena, you open your book by talking about the model minority myth as one damaging stereotype. And you explore a little bit how this can have an impact on mental health. Could you explain the concept for us, please?
Yeah, I mean, the model minority myth was coined by, you know, one man in like the 60s or 70s, mm-hmm. talking about how, you know, back in the day, the Japanese people, even though they went through so much challenges and trauma and trouble, they never complained. Right. So they were basically seen as the good model citizen. And that's not right, because then we're like in this box, right? Thinking we're just the good model citizen. And then we get pitted against other cultures because we're seen as that model citizen. And then, of course, it's extended a little bit more, right? You know, the model minority myth are also, we're seeing Asian people are seen as successful in everything and they don't ever ask for help. And so, of course, now we're afraid to ask for help because that's how we're constantly seen by, right? And because of that, you know, everyone thinks we excel at school. And then this pressure comes in, like, you have to be that thing that one person mentioned like 50, 60 years ago or even longer. I mean, it's really damaging. First of all, you know, the Asian population we all don't come from China. It makes up of over 50 countries and languages. Mm-hmm. So to see us all as one culture is wrong, right? And then to think, you know, we're good at school, we don't complain, we're quiet, we're good model citizens, we are rich, you know, we don't ever ask for help. I mean, that really hurts us, especially in the workplace, right? If you speak up, they're like, well, I thought you guys were quiet.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really unfortunate that still happens, right? And then because if they think we're quiet, then we're easier targets for anti-Asian racism, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then for Asian women, we're still seen as quiet, submissive, and obedient. So then we're 2.5 times targeted more than men. So This is why the model minority myth needs to be abolished.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It not only hurts one person, it hurts a whole population.
Of course. Yeah. Okay. And we all need to go and read your book, I think. when you were writing your book, how did you shape it? Did you shape it as is it a kind of self-help or is it a memoir or how did you?
I think it's a shaping. It's a mix of both. Of course, I'll share some stories that I've been through, lots of research, of course, to make sure like what I'm saying is there's proof to it. I felt like I was writing a very long essay, but you know, just in chapters. But yeah, it's a mix of both. More of like a guide, really, to kind of help you go through it, and then showing what I did that would work, of course, right? Because everyone's different. And then showing them different ways to start, you know, doing things like self-care, self-love, build confidence. But the first half of it is really about, you know, the things we go through, right?
Like
the minority myth, things that Asian women go through, intergenerational trauma, which is a whole chapter on its own because a lot of us go through that. And then other kinds of trauma, you know, it's not only intergenerational, there's childhood trauma, money trauma, racial trauma, sexual trauma, PTSD. I mean, there's so many different kinds that people don't even realize, and they don't even realize that's really stopping them. Like, you know, one thing I mentioned is, you know, at the age of 5 in the Philippines, I failed kindergarten for coloring outside the lines. And that really destroyed me up to my adulthood, because I always thought I was a failure, not realizing that I was just always meant to color outside the lines. So things like that, if we're not aware of that, of course, you know, that's the story I've been telling myself, because that's what happened when I was 5. I literally had to redo kindergarten at another school all over again. So
I love that analogy of, you know, you were made to color outside the lines, and that's perfect.
Thank you.
So did you have any major struggles or confidence wobbles while you were writing that you'd be happy to share, or not? Fine if not as well.
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, like, I was at the coffee shop and I was writing and researching for about 9 hours. And I was like dead tired. Like, I probably went to bed at like 8 p.m. that day, because I was like, because this is brand new, I didn't know what I was doing. I was literally just figuring out what I'm going to write. And I was like, oh my God, first off, I have 3 months to write this book. And on the first day, I already fell asleep. I'm screwed. What am I going to do? But, you know, I just kept chugging, you know, and I just kept doing it until I finally finished the book. I was actually able to finish it before the 3 month window, which was really great. But I mean, that first day, I was like, oh my God, like, if this is going to keep on happening, like I'm screwed. Right. I think it's because also I had a deadline. I was like, I really want this book to finish.
And
it takes.
Quite nice having that outside pressure as well to, you know, to get it done in a way, I suppose.
Yeah.
Was there a point when you started enjoying it? Did you get through that kind of initial, what am I doing? And then start enjoying the process. Yeah.
Yes, of course. I mean, I started, you know, enjoying it. You know, I enjoyed going to the coffee shop because I knew I was going to write, just like that routine. Mm-hmm. And then like feeling good after like I finished a chapter or I finished like a certain part of it, you know, just being able to celebrate it. So, you know, of course, we always have to celebrate all the things that we've gone through, right?
Oh, absolutely. A strange question, but I like to know these things. When you finished a chapter, did you reward yourself in any way? Did you have like little milestone? Because I quite often suggest to people, you know, have milestone rewards, whatever that might be.
I had one big reward after finishing the book, which was I was going to take myself to Paris, which I did. It was my first time ever in Europe, ever in my life. So that was my big reward, because I finished a little bit earlier. I was like, well, I guess I can take that trip. And I just went and did it. And, you know, I love Paris. It's a beautiful city. Croissants are amazing. I mean, every corner you go in is like an Instagram photo waiting to happen, with the cobblestone roads and things, and the buildings and the architecture and the statues and like the Eiffel Tower and the Louvre. So it's like, It was just amazing that I was able to do that, right? Even going to like Champs d'Elysees, you know, even there, it's just like live, a lot of, you know, life and shopping and things like that, and seeing all like the major brand name stores like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, all those places. I was just grateful I was able to do that.
Yeah. Oh, that's a fantastic reward. So since writing the book, what, anything changed for you in terms of your business or your focus or anything like that?
You know, I've been able to utilize the book to reach out to people of higher influence, to have more confidence in myself, to keep showing up. You know, one of the things that most people always ask me is, how do you know when you're promoting yourself too much? Mm. And I'm just like, I don't know. And I don't really care to know, because for me as women, especially as Asian women, we've been in the background for so long. And for me, it's like, if you have something that's going to create a positive impact, share it out, share it out. If it means sharing it out every day, share it out every day. Will people get annoyed? Yeah, of course, right?
Well, do you know what? I think we think that people notice us more than they actually do.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, people don't realize too, when it comes to marketing, pre-social media, they said that a customer needs to see your product at least 7 times before they make a buying decision. But now in the world of TikTok and Instagram and LinkedIn, it's at least 20 times, at least 20 to 25 times or something ridiculous. So this is why, like, I tell people, I don't know, just go out there and keep sharing what you have, right?
Because That's right. Have you ventured onto book talk yet?
I'm trying. I'm not a dancer on TikTok, but I have created some stuff to like have content and get used to having content. Honestly, my favorite platform is LinkedIn.
Oh, me too. Yeah, definitely.
I love LinkedIn. It's where I've been able to get most of my opportunities.
Yeah.
I just love connecting with people on that.
I like it. I find it. I did hang out on Instagram a lot when I first started my business, but I don't like it as much. I find LinkedIn is much deeper and it's much more about kind of written content, and I don't have to worry about visuals so much. And it's, I don't know, I just find there's more depth in the conversations there somehow.
Yeah, and there's no high school drama.
Yes, yeah. No, it's good. Come and hang out with us on LinkedIn, everyone.
Yes.
Okay. So Sheena, what would you recommend to listeners and especially writers in underrepresented groups who are thinking about traditionally publishing?
I mean, just start, of course, right? Doing your research, start figuring out who you want to be, you know, who you want, which like publisher you want to go for. I think it's also important that, like for me, I was in another book, which is Asian Women Who Boss Up. So I was utilizing that book a lot before I had my other book.
Right. Yeah.
And because I was in a book, it's a lot easier for them to realize like, well, she's not really a first time author because she was able to have a chapter in the book. And of course, you know, you also have to realize the quality of the book, because we've seen some books out there that are just like, honestly, I know this is bad to say, but some of it is like a slap in the face, you know, like 20 page book on Amazon and they charge like $30 for it.
Yes. Like, yeah.
Like seriously, like, you know, it's just, you know, you got to have a good quality book as well. Right. You can't just make something up and you think that you're going to have overnight success. Like, you know, you reap what you sow. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
You have to invest, right? It's just in anything that you do, right? If you cheap out on something, I mean, that's what's going to happen, right? But if you really invest in a truly good book that you can market, you can utilize, you can showcase, I mean, it's better off for you, right? Because they see that you've been in a book before. And of course, you know, having good online presence, right? If they research you and there's nothing out there, how do you expect them to work with you? You know, you have to understand that you have to be bankable, unfortunately, right? Because their business is selling.
Oh, books. Of course. Yeah, no, of course. Okay.
Start building up your online real estate, whether it's TV, print, podcasting, whatever that may look like. You know, just start. I mean, you can also go through the route of having a literary agent because they would probably know better, right? I just never went through that and I didn't even know that existed. I only knew about that when people kept asking me who my literary agent was.
Yeah, but yeah. Okay.
If people research me, like I have a lot of stuff on the internet, right?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, definitely. You've been putting yourself out there consistently and talking about your stuff to, you know, bringing your message to people. And that's the important thing, I think, isn't it?
Well, when they research me, I'm not just like some random person, right? I have enough online presence to say, okay, well, I mean, she has a good online presence.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Unfortunately, that's what you have to do, right? To start being taken seriously and things like that. Of course, there's a few people who get lucky, very few, right? But I'd rather build my online presence, build myself up so that when people look at me, you know, they don't have to worry about it.
And then also, you know, you've got an audience ready and waiting to buy a book, you know, because you have been building your audience for all that time. So they're there, they're waiting to buy it. They'll probably pre-order it, you know, all of that. So,
Like most, like people don't realize, you know, publishers want to make sure that when you write a book, it sells because that's their whole business, to sell books. So if you don't know how to sell a book, then, you know, how do you expect them to believe in you? Right.
Yeah.
You know, this is just the truth, right?
No, that's right.
I've had people be like, well, could you introduce me to them? And, you know, when I look at their stuff and I'm like, you know, why should I introduce you to them when you have nothing to show for, right? Build your online presence up. And then maybe we can figure it out.
And also, when you're doing that, you're working out your ideas. You're kind of, you know, you're working out your ideas out loud and you're getting clearer on your message and what you want to talk about so that when you actually do come to write the book, you're kind of more certain about it, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Great. Okay. So, Sheena, something I ask all my guests, what book are you currently reading or what book would you recommend to listeners?
I'm biased, so I would recommend my book, Asian Women Who Boss Up.
Of course. Yeah.
Profiles the stories of 18 Asian women who have been able to forge their own path, overcome obstacles, and thrive. And as I mentioned, even though it's, you know, 18 Asian women, it doesn't mean that people from other cultures can't relate to it. I mean, we have some amazing stories. We've had women who were diagnosed with breast cancer and sued by the FTC at the same time, and was able to overcome that. And yeah, that alone is an, you know, inspiring story.
Yeah.
Women who've literally went through bankruptcy and had to rebuild their business from scratch. We have another lady who was migrating from Vietnam to the US, got stranded in the middle of the ocean for a week, got kidnapped by Asian pirates, which I didn't know was a thing, got separated from her family and was able to reunite with her family because the US Navy was able to help them out and save them.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, that's just me. I'm very biased because I'm part of the book, but I would read that.
Okay, fine. And where can listeners find you? Of course, LinkedIn. And where else can we find you and connect with you?
Yeah, for sure. So you can go to my website, www.sheenayapchan.com. You can look me up on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter for the upcoming book. You can pre-order or by the time you hear this, it's ready. You can order it on Amazon, on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles. I think in the UK, it's like WH Smith. Is that?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I think it's available on WH Smith and then just any other major book retailers.
Great. All right. Well, thank you.
And if ever you forgot anything I said, I'm literally the only Sheena Yapchan on the internet.
Oh, wow. That is good. Brilliant. Okay. Well, thank you again so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It was such a blast.
If you need more help with your writing, head on over to my website, lizzytangye.com, where you can find a ton of resources to help you. There's a free author workbook to help you decide which book to write and focus your ideas, along with daily email guidance from me for a week as you work through the questions in the workbook. You'll also find links to everything mentioned on this show in the show notes.